Sports Radio 98.9, The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson here with you on this New Year's Day, going until 6 o'clock today. Still got probably about 15, 20 minutes until the Rose Bowl kicks off. Continued a full slate of college football games, of course. All eyes around here will be at 8 o'clock tonight for Sugar Bowl with Georgia and Ole Miss. Spent a long time talking about Hawks, talking college football today. Haven't spent near enough talking Falcons. And we started off the show getting into this mindset of, in the new year, hey, let's deal more in reality. Let's not get so overworked on the emotional side of things when it comes to our favorite teams, when it comes to discussing them and evaluating who they really are. And I feel like Monday made it difficult to do that when it comes to the Falcons. Because the question I want to ask you is, what did Monday night prove about the Falcons? What did it wholeheartedly prove about the Falcons? Playing an LA Rams team that 100% wanted that game, needed that game for the sake of the playoffs. Like, their whole outlook on the postseason is different now after losing to the Falcons 27-24. And yet, I don't want to get too caught up and draw conclusions from that game that aren't actually there. So I'll ask you, 404-726-0929, what did Monday night prove about the Falcons? For me, the easiest takeaway, what it proved, is this roster has talent. Like, don't let anyone for a second, when you start getting into conversations of who should stay, who should go, this roster has talent. You start getting into conversations with people about, you know, whether this coaching staff should remain, who on this coaching staff should stick around, and it leads you to, some people want to go the route of, well, I mean, you know, who are they throwing the football to? I mean, you know, sure, the pass rush has been there, but have other elements of the defense been good enough? Cause you to question the talent on this team. But Monday night against the Rams, a playoff team and a team that is easily in the conversation, because of the way that the NFC looks right now, easily in the amongst the conversation of a Super Bowl contending team, and you got the win. You went in, you were able to get after Matthew Stafford, essentially ruined his chances of winning an MVP. Like, it is all Drake Maye for the taking at this point, and it's not necessarily because Matthew Stafford hasn't played an MVP caliber season. It's because, you know, recency bias happens and people get stuck into storylines, and the Falcons were a part of ruining that for Matthew Stafford with him throwing 3 interceptions in that game. So what did Monday night prove? That this roster has talent. And who is this roster led by? Bijan Robinson. Man. I mean, that, I got so excited not only for Bijan to play like that on Monday, to break off the big 93-yard run, what he finished with nearly 200 yards rushing, 195. I mean, for him to be able to do that on a national stage felt so gratifying, because you have the NFL media. You have other fans who will question his impact on this team. And, well, you know, I mean, he could only do so much. No, he was the offense for the Falcons on Monday. And he's easily, if Monday proved anything, it is that Bijan Robinson is the Atlanta Falcons' best football player. I love Raheem taking it a step further. And that if there's anything that Raheem does an incredible job at, it is at believing in his players and instilling confidence in his players. And by calling Bijan the best player in football and being able to double down in that aspect, I think there have been moments over the course of this season where you would love to have seen Bijan's impact be larger. And so you think, well, he can't, you know, throw the football to himself. He can run it, though. And what he was able to pull off against that Rams defense that has shown how good they can be, it makes you feel good. It makes you feel like, you know, you've got talent on this roster. You have a star player for the future to come. I think what it also proved is how important special teams are. Monday night was a great reminder of, oh yeah, still an aspect of this Falcons team that has got to be better, has absolutely got to be better in 2026. I'm quite honestly tired of talking about special teams just for the simple fact of you just want fix it. You know, you just want to see this team be able to fix it. I do have questions of, you know, who moves forward. And is that a aspect of this coaching staff that does not have a future in Atlanta? I know that Raheem in the past has talked about the simple fact of, you know, well, I don't think it's a communication issue, yet this is a results-driven industry. And if you aren't getting results, you've got to go. We've got to see something else. I mean, the Falcons were obviously willing to do that when it came to the kicking position, who I think if anything, Zane Gonzalez has shown he is a guy worth keeping around on this team. You know, clearly you get the block. That's frustrating. But the consistency that we have seen from Zane outside of that and his ability to bounce back from seeing it blocked and knowing that, man, if that was earlier in the season and that was Younghoe Koo or that was Parker Romo, zero confidence. Zero. Zero confidence. But I believe that Zane Gonzalez has instilled some confidence back into that element of special teams. But if Monday proved anything, it is that special teams still a problem for this team. But that does not include Zane Gonzalez, because I do think that Zane is a future part of this team moving forward that you should be able to count on. Here's the other element of it, and this is the one that I brought up at the beginning of the show, and it's unfortunate, but under this current coaching staff, it is just the reality. And now it's not just this coaching staff, because it's been previous regimes included in this, but this team plays better with no stakes. It's just the reality. It is just the reality. The Falcons, since 2018, I brought this stat up earlier. Since 2018, the Falcons are 53-78 in games played with playoff eligibility. That's a 40% win percentage. in games played after being mathematically eliminated, the Falcons are 11-4. That is a 73% win percentage since 2018. If Monday night proved anything, it proved that the plan should not change, because if you're able to get wins against a team like the Rams, that shouldn't save anyone's job. That shouldn't change any decisions moving forward. You had already played 16 games up until that point and shown who the Atlanta Falcons were in 2025, now moving into 2026. But if it, what did Monday night prove about the Falcons? The plan should not change. You can beat teams like that because there is talent on this roster. You still almost gave it away. You still almost gave it away. And I feel like getting the win allows for that conversation to take a back seat. And you just want to, like, hey, let's not address the elephant in the room of letting LA go on a run and really having to put a stamp on things to be able to come out with a win. Big part of that, obviously, what Bijan Robinson was able to do. A big part of the questioning that game is going away from Bijan. Literally the TV broadcast itself. Troy Aikman out there going, I know that Tyler Allgeier doesn't fumble, is very confident back. But you just wonder how you get away from Bijan Robinson and what he was able to do. If Monday night proved anything, it's that the Falcons cannot change from the plan of what was already set in place the previous 16 games. Whatever decisions that were planned on being made absolutely should not change just because you're able to beat the Rams. Let's go to the phone lines. 404-726-0929. Anthony, what do you think the Monday night proved about the Falcons?
Here's the thing. I mean, it was a good win, but people, you got to go back a couple of years now. Raheem Morris, he knows McVay's system, okay? He practiced every day when he was a Rams DC on that. Zach Robinson is a student of McVay, okay? So they had that. And I'm not going to say the officials, but there seemed like there were a lot of questionable calls down the stretch. I won't even go into it. You know what I'm talking about. I mean, without that, I mean, come on, the Rams win the game. But But here's the thing. You're having a hard time from what I was listening to your dialogue there. It seems like you're having a hard time saying that Raheem needs to let go and that wasn't enough. Is that your position? Like, you don't really want to say that because, you're kind of going back and forth there. Like, I'm a little confused. Like, what's your take on it? I mean, does
on
he say
Raheem?
Yeah, this whole coaching staff, come back next? That's the big question. How great Bijan is. We know these receivers have talent. We know they've got a great backup running back in Allgeier. It's some talent on the defense. But the question is, does this coaching staff come back? That's the question. Do you trust Raheem and his regime for another year? That's it. What I think is going to come down to, I think it's going to come down to the Saints game, believe it or not. You know, they always play each other close. It's at home. If the Falcons come out and lay an egg, then he's going to go. If the Falcons come out and they beat the Saints convincingly, which only has, like, I think they got, seven wins. They kind of, turned it around somewhat. Obviously not a playoff team. But I think that's going to say a lot. And then the Falcons end up 8-9. I think it'll be hard for Arthur Smith to let him go at 8-9 with the way they finish. So I disagree with you when you say – it's already set in motion, because 3 weeks ago we were like, I mean, he's got to get out of town. Everybody in Atlanta was saying that.
And you think the last couple of weeks have changed that?
To be honest, yeah. Here's the thing. This last game against the Saints, finishing at 8-9, I think that would make a strong argument. I think there'd be some pause there. But if they come out and they don't play well, then that kind of removes that great win against the Rams. I'm a Steelers fan, man. I'm just here, but I've lived in Georgia my entire life.
Yeah.
But we got our own host of problems. But My thing is, if you ask me, no, he's got to go. He should go. He should go. Because the reason why they got that win, he's familiar with the Rams. They jumped out on him. They almost blew it. I mean, they almost blew it. He had some questionable things he did in the second half as far as just play calling and tightening down on the defense that they just had laps. It was almost like the Falcons knew they weren't supposed to have that lead. You know what I mean? But they've done that before. They did the same thing against the Buffalo Bills, who is an AFC contender. But, I mean, what's your take? I just want to ask you. I just told you, do you think he stays or goes?
I appreciate the phone call, Anthony. I think it's a decision not up to me. He'd be gone. If it's up to me, he'd be gone. And that decision, like I said, should have been made weeks ago. If you're hiring consulting firms, if you're looking at bringing in additional management into this team, that makes me think you question, if you're Arthur Blank, how good this team can be in the future, which your coaching staff is the questionable element of that. That's why I was talking about, I don't think it is a talent issue. Now, of course, you got to answer quarterback next year, and that's a lot to move forward with. But you've got a talented roster, and you've got a questionable coaching staff. What if that needs to change? Feels pretty obvious. All right, other side of the break, let's get into a Ask the Dopey segment with producer Garrett. It's the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson, Sports Radio 99 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 99 The Game and the Odyssey app. It is the Dopey Millennial Show. I guess I hadn't gone like scorched earth talking Falcons. And I don't know, maybe some of you, Anthony in particular, want more of that. I don't know that I find it particularly productive. Because, yes, like, I guess if I wasn't clear enough, the obvious is that you should make changes to this coaching staff. Your offensive staff has to go at a minimum. But after that, it's really a matter of does Arthur make a change at head coach and, you know, philosophy change there, or keep running it back with what we've seen? Yeah, that one's one I'm not going to get caught up in the weeds about, because my opinion versus what's actually going to happen, two totally different things. But continuing from Falcons conversation to a fun one that I always like to keep it lighthearted on the Dopey Millennial Show. Sometimes I have someone who is outside of the millennial age range, but it's always nice, you know, having Garrett on the other side of the glass. Let's get into an Ask the Dopey. Five questions, any topic. Welcome in to the show, of course, Garrett. Take it away.
Hey, hello, hello. All right, so the big news from yesterday that I don't think enough people talked about, but I talked about, Sam and Greg talked about it at least, too. The last AJC print edition came out yesterday. Did you go get a copy?
I did not.
I did. I went and grabbed one.
Did they make, like, actual special, this is the final one? Or did they keep it kind of like just like, it's like regular stories?
It was a little bit of both.
Okay.
I asked, I was talking to D-Led about this too, because, I mean, of course, he's been getting the print for as long as he's been alive. And he went down and took a video of himself going to get his paper on the last time, and it's just D-Led doing D-Led things.
Right.
I was talking to him about it, about what he wrote for it, and it was like his was just standard run of the mill stuff, right? So he had to grade the Falcons and against the Rams, and he was doing some other hitters for I don't know, whatever stuff that you normally do for the AJC.
Yeah.
There were also some other general columns of reminiscing, looking back on big moments and stuff throughout the time a lot of these people have been writing for the AJC. So it was a pretty big issue. So if you have a chance, go pick it up. It's probably still at your local Publix or something like that. That's where I grabbed mine. But my question to you to kick this thing off, your headline stories for Atlanta sports, we can go all time, we can do your lifetime, whatever you think it would be, but if you are putting something together for the cover story for the AJC Sports final print edition, what is your headline story, Caleb?
I think it's got to be It's got to be the bomb going off during the Olympics.
Not the Olympics themselves, but the bomb.
That's story. Like, sure.
You're right.
Terrible. Sorry. Maybe I shouldn't have gone such a negative way.
But you also could have done Falcons blowing a 28-3 lead and just break all the
Well, yeah, numbers. But that I think that one grabbed, like, the... I mean, they made a movie of it. They didn't even make a movie about anything else that happened during those Atlanta Olympics. Just the Olympics overall, yes, I would say. The one that sticks out in my brain... that I remember just because actually a friend of mine turned the headline into this really cool artsy thing that blended a bunch of different Atlanta and Georgia sports is like the opening ceremonies of the 96 Olympics. I also just own like a strange amount of Olympic things for the 96 Olympics just because I think it's a really cool event. And I think it did a lot for this city to boost it in a positive way. The only reason why like that story, is the one that kind of more so came to my mind immediately to like define the paper is just because like that was hard news. That was a big news story. And for a local newspaper, I feel like, you know, that would be one pretty strongly associated with it. Yes. 28, you know, like the Super Bowl, definitely.
I was just going morbid things.
Oh, sure.
But, I mean, you have the 2021 World Series title. You have the 95 World Series title. The Falcons, the Hawks, the Atlanta Braves coming to Atlanta back in the late 60s. That could be one as well. But just an interesting thought there. The Olympics, I feel like, is the thing. That's got to be the biggest thing in Atlanta sports history.
I'm
culturally
also,
and sports-wise.
I'm curious, too, when it comes to the AJC and the not doing print anymore. Like, I have, you mentioned the World Series there and the, you know, Georgia's two national championships. Hey, guess what I have framed in my office at home? All of those, and it's AJC papers. And so I wonder for future championships that come to this city, whether, you know, I mean, Atlanta United gets one when they win back in 2018. Like, I wonder if the paper will, if we'll still be able to get a physical copy for a championship being won or a big moment that, you know, now that they're getting rid of the daily production of it, if you'll still be able to get those special moments. Because there's a lot of local newspapers still getting printed in the area that, you know, hopefully they would be able to turn to one of those printing shops and get it worked out. I haven't seen the specifics of whether or not there are plans to do that. I just hope it's within the things that they've considered.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. All right, let's move on. Jalen Johnson, could he become an all-time great Atlanta Hawk?
Ooh, all-time great.
That is not a very expansive list necessarily, but it's what I mean. You'd have Dominique Wilkins, Pistol Pete, Dikembe Mutombo, Trey Young.
Yeah,
that's. I mean, don't hate me for forgetting anybody, but it's not exactly who we consider like a Joe Johnson or something like
that's
that.
That's the thing.
It's not super expansive in that regard, but
it's
Jalen Johnson. Where does he stand?
I was just about to say it's tough because it's like, I mean, You had Lou Williams come through and, you know, and have great moments being a local guy. You had Joe Johnson. You had Kyle Korver. I wouldn't necessarily look at any of those three as legends when it comes to the Hawks. The way that Dominique has clearly impacted things, the way that Dikembe clearly impacted things, the way that, whether you like him or not, Trae Young definitely positively impacted this Atlanta Hawks team, and it will forever be a legend and thoroughly discussed. Will Jalen Johnson be in that same camp? I'll do a cop out, Garrett. I'll say if the Atlanta Hawks build around Jalen Johnson, he can be that person. Will he? Right now, I would say no, but if things change and Ansi Salehe decides to build around Jalen Johnson and go to you know, trying to be a contending team that way, then yeah, it's possible. His defense has got to improve because I think it's taken a step back this season. It's been not the problem for the Hawks, but it's just been a problem that has been, you know, other issues contributing to the success of this team. He's also just not a guy who loves being in the limelight. And I think, you know, being someone like Trey having that moment against the Knicks in the playoffs, like that plays, there are moments people remember Dominique in the dunk contest. Like there are moments that stick out in people's brains, and Jalen Johnson hasn't had any of those moments yet. And so I think to be determined if they build around him.
That makes sense to me. That makes sense to me. Just moving forward into the future, I mean, he's pretty damn good.
He's so good.
He's so much fun to watch.
Mr. Triple-Double is what he's turning into.
And that is getting some attention, some well-deserved attention. All right. This is kind of an either-or type of question, but I would say Atlanta United, the Atlanta Hawks, the Atlanta Falcons, and the Atlanta Braves all had disappointing 2025s, and I'm talking calendar year 2025, for different reasons, but mostly losing. Which one had the more disappointing year? Atlanta United. Of course, they start out with all the big additions, and then they end up selling, and then they're just a disaster. The Atlanta Hawks, who, I mean, you've been without Trae Young all season. You had the end of the 2024-25 season that just didn't go the way that you really wanted it to. The Atlanta Falcons, who obviously they enter the year with playoff expectations, and they're going to end below 500 for the eighth year in a row. Or the Atlanta Braves, who are expected to be a World Series contender, yet outside of the postseason. What say you, Caleb Johnson?
Yeah, I think it's got to be the team that we went into the season, as you just mentioned there, going, they can compete for a World Series. And yet, by the time the end of the season came, we were like, oh, I kind of forgot they're still playing. I mean, literally, when that final week of the regular season came, I admittedly had spent a couple of weeks at that point not even watching games. I came back around literally to watch Charlie Morton. It had reached that level of ugly because of injuries that clearly hit this team, but the lineup was far from, you know, far from what they should have been and what the expectations were, you know, with obviously having heavy hitters that didn't show up, whether, you know, Matt Olson, Sean Murphy, Austin Riley, like everybody having a lesser season and reaching the month of August and you're not competitive. Yeah, that's something I didn't plan for, didn't see coming, and was extremely disappointed in. And so, yeah, it's got to, I mean, the rest of those teams, there are expectations, but not near in the same way. It was just like, hey, let's have a good year. No, for the Braves, it was, let's go win another championship, and you didn't even make the postseason. So clearly the most disappointing team of 2025 was the Atlanta Braves. All right, on the other side of the break, let's talk with our buddy Jarvis Davis. He's a co-host of Locked On Georgia Tech. We haven't spent a ton of time talking Georgia Tech football, but there's some interesting storylines going on with that team, and we'll get into it next. It's the Dopey Millennial Show, Sports Radio 99 The Game and the Odyssey app. Sports Radio 99 The Game and the Odyssey app. It's the Dopey Millennial Show on a Thursday. Happy New Year to all of you out there. We just got some Falcons news pretty recently. The Falcons have placed Mike Hughes on injured reserve, and they brought up Khalid Kareem to the active roster. Yeah, I'd say so after Monday night. If there was the one thing, we talked earlier about what Monday night proved for the Falcons. Yeah, if it proved anything, it's that Khalid Kareem deserves a real shot to be a part of this roster.
He's had a big month, man. He's had a big last 30 days. He had
really
a baby
has.
To start the first part of December, and
okay.
Now he's on the active roster to end the month.
Yeah.
Big month.
I mean, good things happen when you play good football, and that is definitely what Khalid Kareem did on Monday night, and good for him, man. Like you see some of those stories that are out there that you just want to see a guy perform, you know, just get the best, I guess, because of a good story. And Khalid Kareem definitely has been one of those. Really unfortunate, though, to see Mike Hughes hit injured reserve and, you know, the injury side of all of those things. Let's check in on the college football playoff. You've got out at the Rose Bowl right now, Alabama and Indiana. It looked like Fernando Mendoza was dealing with some headset issues as to what led to Indiana not being able to have a successful drive. They are able to get the field goal, though. So early in the second quarter, Indiana is up on Alabama 3-0. Of course, a team not in the college football playoffs, but I found them interesting to discuss right now because there is a ton of movement going on with the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets. So I thought we'd go out to the WadeFord.com hotline, bring in one of the hosts of Locked On Georgia Tech, Jarvis Davis. Jarvis, how you doing on this Thursday, man?
I'm doing good, buddy, man. How are you?
I am great. I know when it comes to the Yellow Jackets, obviously, as I mentioned, you know, a team that when they were 8-0 this season thought, man, they have got to have some pretty legitimate hopes for the college football playoffs. Obviously, the way that the rest of their regular season went prevented that from happening as they miss out on the ACC championship game. They do get to play in the Pop-Tarts Bowl last week and came up short against BYU, something we'll get into in just a bit. But Jarvis, I just want to ask you kind of from a 30,000-foot view look of this season. After starting 8-0, where they ended up finishing, do you see this season as a disappointment for Georgia Tech?
I think if you ask me the way you start the question with the 30,000-foot view, no, it's not a failure. But when you look at – when you actually get into something and you start to recognize what the opportunities – the opportunities that you have and that's in front of you – and you don't reach those opportunities and you don't take advantage of those opportunities once they come in front of you, i.e. the Pitt game and Bobby Dodd, last game for Haynes King as a senior, you know, and being able to play your way into the ACC championship game with an opportunity to get into the college football playoff, yeah, I have to change that. I have to say it's not a disappointment, but, man, you know, you had a good season, you win 9 games, and but you have to look at it from a standpoint of and say, yeah, we missed the boat on that one. And because that's not – when you have opportunity to get into the ACC championship game and then get into college ball playoff, that's things that you have to take advantage of because there's no guarantee that you can get back to it with – all of the movement and with NIL, transfer portal, all those things at play, you just don't know what type of team you might be able to field the following year.
Yeah, it definitely seems just this day and age of college football that is so true. Jarvis, I feel like, too, when it comes to the season for Tech, it's one of those if you had told people beforehand, hey, they're going to go 9-4 this season, you'd be like, oh, okay. And yet, by the time you get to the end of December and you're like, oh yeah, they went 9-4. Oh, okay. That doesn't quite feel the same. When it comes to the Pop-Tarts Bowl, an opportunity for Georgia Tech to finish the season on a high note, win 10 games, feels like the discussion could have been very different if you, especially a BYU team that also was very close to making the college football playoff. But that game goes very similar to the season where start off strong and then BYU able to get back in. How did you see Georgia Tech's flaws exposed in their last game?
I think that, I have to start on the defense side of football, Caleb, because that's just how I get down. When you look at not being able to put any real pressure on Bear Bachmeyer, Blake Gideon was trying to manufacture pressure, but Bear was just sitting back there like, oh, okay, you blitzing off the edge with your corner. Oh, yeah, I'm about to throw exactly where you just came from. It was just so methodical and surgical, I would say, with the way he was throwing the football all around. And based off of what I've seen from Bear, he's not necessarily the Peyton Manning or Tom Brady's of the world when you have guys just knowing exactly where to go with the football once they see pressure. And I think that has to do with, you know, Blake not necessarily really disguising it, and he kind of made it a little easy for him. You have that aspect of it, and then you also have another aspect of it. They really didn't have any consistent guys coming off the edge to put pressure, just guys that you could just line up and just rush for and just get to the quarterback. They didn't have that, you know, on a consistent basis. So when you combine guys not really being able to get there without sending pressure with guys being a little obvious when he sends pressure, that's how you end up, you know, giving up that lead that you gave up. And end up losing that game to the BYU.
Talking with Jarvis Davis on the WadeFord.com hotline. Jarvis, one of the hosts of Locked On Georgia Tech. It feels like the big storyline around this Yellow Jackets team moving into 2026 is the departure of Buster Faulkner, the offensive coordinator who was seen as, you know, kind of this offensive genius that was able to get the most out of this team and out of Haynes King in order to lead them and be successful as they were. He goes down to Florida, but he doesn't go alone. He takes a lot of this Yellow Jackets coaching staff, offensively, I should say, with him, and he takes who a lot of people saw as the next quarterback for Georgia Tech in Aaron Filo. How do you see Georgia Tech responding to losing an offensive coordinator, you know, obviously still haven't replaced the guy, and having to replace who you thought was going to be your future quarterback in Aaron Filo?
I think Tech has to be aggressive, right? When you think about the incumbent starter walking out of that door, the guy that you paid $1 million just to stay last year because he knew he wasn't going to play. So obviously you invested in that position to then reap the benefits of it for the 2026 season. And now that he's gone, you have to use that same aggressiveness, that same duffel bag full of money that you threw out last year. Yeah, you're going to have to combine that with a couple more dollars to try to get a guy in here with some experience to at least compete for the position, right? Because you can't go into the 2026 season with Graham Knowles, who doesn't have any starts for you, 6'7", 230-pound quarterback that is reportedly, you know, a little bit of a favorite of Chris Winkie, but and a four-star kid, according to 24/7 Sports, and Cole Bergeron out of Louisiana, a true freshman. So there, you just can't have a guy who's been in your system, you know, and was pretty much guaranteed to be the starter for you, walk out of that door, and your plan is to have the guys that you just brought in and Cole Bergeron and a guy that was already on your roster, have those guys battle it out for the starting spot, especially when you got all this financial support at your, you know, at your disposal. I don't think you can just kind of like laissez-faire. But hey, yeah, we're going to go with the guys that we have and the guy we just brought in. No, you can't do it like that. You have to be super aggressive. And I believe Key will be, because there's a lot of moving parts on this offensive side of the football. Like you mentioned, with the offensive coordinator not being announced yet, I feel like he has who the offensive coordinator is going to be. He just hasn't announced it yet. And because he's starting to put some of the guys who walked out the door as far as running back coach and all that stuff. So I think there is a sense of urgency on the offensive side of the football as far as from a personnel standpoint and from a coaching staff standpoint.
Jarvis, the portal opens tomorrow, and it's, you know, kind of going to be chaos, especially as there's just one portal this year for teams to go after guys and to be making changes. Given that you don't have an offensive coordinator named yet, feels like there's some uncertainty in that aspect, but there's still, regardless of who your coaches are, you know your positional needs outside of quarterback, which can, you know, get addressed in the portal What are the other positions for Georgia Tech that you think are just vitally important that they've got to address in the transfer portal?
I think that once the season ended, I was real big on the guard positions. Like the guard, center guard. Like I'm just gonna go, guard, center guard. That interior part of your offensive line, there needs to be some competition at that center spot, because I feel like Harrison Moore had a few hiccups in the Pop-Tarts Bowl with some legal procedures or snaps or whatever. So I don't that doesn't necessarily sit well with me. So I think you need some competition needs to be brought in there. And then you had Joe Fusel at the guard, and Keelan Rutledge walk out of the door as well. So there, those guys are seniors. They've been here for you. Those guys, one of them is going to go on to play into the NFL, Keelan Rutledge. So be on the lookout for him. So you have to replace. We have that type of talent walk out of the door. You have to replace that. So I think from guard, center guard has to be addressed. And then I'm going to go on the other side of the football at the defensive tackle spot. Jordan Vandenberg, Jason Moore, Keelan Stone, all those guys are gone, man. You have to replace those guys. So, the edge guys don't matter if your defensive tackles are young and not being disruptive. So I feel like the guard, center guard on the offensive side of the football and the defensive tackle spots, they have to be addressed first, because that's the foundation of any football team. You look at any football team and want to figure out whether or not they're good, take a look at their offensive line and their defensive lines, specifically on the interior part of those lines. Mm-hmm. And they'll tell the tale every single year. So, yeah, I'm sure Brent Key, as a former offensive lineman, he's going to address that position, and he's going to address it aggressively.
That is Jarvis Davis, host of Locked On Georgia Tech. Make sure you give the podcast a listen. Follow Jarvis on social media at JarvisD90. Jarvis, really appreciate you joining us on this New Year day, and hope you have a happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, man. Anytime, man.
All right. On the other side of the break, let's take a second look at all of the headlines of the day and of the week with something I like to call the leftovers. It's the Dopey Millennial Show. Caleb Johnson with you on Sports Radio 99 The Game and the Odyssey app.